Uh-oh. Sounds like somebody's got a case of the Mondays.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Midway through the third quarter, I was ready for more Gaga. So just shut this down. It's 28-3. Just bring Gaga out. Let her finish. And then the Falcons gagged. Holy mackerel. What was that?
That was, as my wife pointed out, maybe except the difference being it was 108 years, if the Cubs, after leading in Game 7, had ended up losing.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's, I can't imagine.
I don't know how the Falcons come back from that. I know it's a ridiculous statement to make, but you're that close.
I don't know, Steve.
28-3. Yeah. No one's come back from more than 10 points in the Super Bowl. It's 28-3. And you could see it in their eyes. You didn't even have to take the shields off their helmets. They were already at the party. They were already figuring out what they were going to do with their bonus checks. They were already making the talk show appearances. Mm-hmm. And suddenly the greatest quarterback in NFL history chewed them up and spit them. They're on their own. He's on his own two. Yeah. He's on a two.
Yeah. I know.
You don't have a 98-yard drive from the two. Yeah. Plus a two-point conversion, tie.
And he was beat up, too. I mean, they were hitting him all, well, at least all first half.
Yeah, not the second half. They didn't touch him. Yeah.
How about this? If the kid doesn't clank the extra point off on their first touchdown, they win it in regulation.
How about that? Someone else said the internet was going crazy. I haven't seen an upset like this since, election night, November 2016.
You know, it was like that. It really was.
It was.
Yeah.
I mean, you have this lead.
Plus, Hillary put a bunch of money on the Falcons.
Right.
Yeah, she had a ton of money on the Falcons.
She probably did.
Unbelievable. Let's do the six.
Now it's time to move on to a little something we call...
The Steve Cochran Show presents the top six at six.
That's the best number I've heard yet.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Yes.
Six.
Lucky guess.
My favorite number is six.
The top six at six on 720 WGN.
Unless you live in Boston, that is not the greatest Super Bowl ever. As a matter of fact, it's not even close. It's the greatest comeback by far. But I would say 30-40% of the audience would have bailed. Probably didn't even see it. They're in their cars on their way home from the party.
You think?
Oh, yeah. 28-3 in the second half? People weren't paying attention? There's no way.
I don't know. I think at that point, people have jumped on the Atlanta bandwagon, and they want to see the end of the game. They want to see the new champs crowned. I'm not sure people bailed on it.
No.
It'd be interesting
if
to see what the ratings
If you could quantify it somehow. Yeah, I bet the ratings fell off the table. Now, here's what happens. They'll fall off the table. You get that bell curve, right? Because they fall off the table, and then suddenly, because of the internet, everybody's going, what? Hey, what? What's going
coming
on?
Back?
What?
Yeah, so the last 5 minutes, I'm sure, went through the roof.
Yeah.
But when they went to overtime, there's no way. Just give it to the Patriots. The Falcons' little hearts are broken.
Well, when they won the toss.
You knew it was like
crazy.
Even Matt Ryan just seemed to slump away from the toss. And I was like, wow, buddy, you don't seem pumped up at all.
Well, that's a good point.
He just kind of was totally deflated.
There was a little panic in his eyes. Matt Ryan, who owned it, just played the game of his life. But when Brady started chewing him up.
Oh, my God.
They had a couple of sideline shots of Matt Ryan. And this happens in every sport. When panic sets in. Everything speeds up, and all you want to do is get it over as quickly as possible. And then suddenly you blow an assignment. I mean, the Patriots had open receivers in places you couldn't even imagine. There were guys, it looked like they had 45 guys on the field.
But you know what? He was overthrowing those same open receivers in the first half.
Well, yeah, that's a problem. Once the white guy found his rhythm, that was a problem.
Is he the greatest quarterback?
Oh, yeah. No, five
Super Bowls. I would think so, too.
Oh, come on. He's gotta
be. The numbers, absolutely. Just say it. I mean, you can't, not just the numbers, but just the way he gets the team to play for him. He's not with different guys.
He never had Jerry Rice. He never had a Jerry Rice for years. He never had a John Taylor for years like Joe Montana did, and I always thought Montana was the greatest. He never had an Emmitt Smith. Yeah. He never had a regular running back.
He had Randy Moss for a
season
while.
Or two.
Yeah, briefly.
And now he has Martellus Bennett.
He's got Martellus, but he's going free agent. But Gronkowski.
Who wasn't even in the game.
Who wasn't in
Best
the game.
Best player on the field. He wasn't even in the game.
He was in more commercials
48
than he was
commercials. He wasn't in the game.
Yes. Unbelievable.
By the way, Martellus Bennett, by the way. has become the first of the Patriots to say he will not join the team when they visit the White House.
The Trump thing or what?
Yep.
Mm. Wow.
Well, it's America. You know,
that's what he said. That's what he said.
And his name of the team is the Patriots. Oh, well.
Item number two. Were those the worst commercials ever?
Ugh.
There
terrible.
Wasn't a single standout commercial in that bunch.
The only one that I liked that I hadn't seen was the Pee Wee football game when the little Pee Wee football game
with Cam Newton
when he turned into.
Yeah.
I hadn't seen that one ahead of time.
Yeah.
That was cute.
But don't you think it's because the bar was so low that one stood out?
Exactly.
I thought the Tide thing with Terry Bradshaw was sort of
not bad.
That was okay with Jeffrey Tambor.
The one with Christopher Walken and Justin Timberlake could not have been dumber.
Well, that's the thing. A lot of them were dumb.
And John Malkovich, come on. I'm
and they
so
could
tired
have done
of
more,
him.
But they could have done more with that.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Tim
and a couple of them were just creepy.
Yeah. The Mr. Clean one, come on, that was creepy.
It was creepy, but then
she's
the
all
dad,
hot for Mr. Clean.
And Humpty Dumpty,
you know,
was
the Sprint guy creeps me out anyway. The guy that used to be the Verizon guy. Just get off my TV. You're bothering me. And then the dad's faking his own death in front of his children.
In front of his kids.
Yeah, that was weak.
I don't know. Those are bad, bad, bad commercials. But the Super Bowl was saved by the Gaga.
Mm-hmm.
Just when you thought it couldn't get any worse, it got way better. That's one of the greatest half, maybe the greatest halftime show ever.
I agree.
Yep.
Phenomenal.
Unbelievable.
And you know what was super cool is I personally was waiting for either Tony Bennett or somebody. Yeah. She didn't need anybody else.
She had nobody else.
I think everybody was waiting for
it. Well, they said Tony Bennett was going to be part of it.
He was at the beginning. He
did
the intro. He just did the intro. Yeah, really quick.
Yeah, but nobody else sang.
She was just.
She tore it up. 47. I made this point on Twitter. She had more yardage than the Patriots, and she did it in heels
while
she was singing.
and you know, she's not the best dancer in the world. She really isn't, but she really must have practiced the heck out of that because she did great. Just those aerial turns, and she was in fantastic shape.
And
somersaulting.
Perhaps the biggest news with Lady Gaga of the day.
What?
Can I announce it?
Yeah.
She's coming to Wrigley Field this summer.
Oh, is that right?
Last night after the Super Bowl, she tweeted her tour dates.
Oh, cool.
She's going to be the 8th concert at Wrigley Field this summer.
She's great. Look, and what kind of cardiovascular shape do you have to be in to run around like that and still sing? When she did Million Reasons, which is a great song.
Mm-hmm.
When she did Million Reasons, she had already run about a mile and a half.
Mm-hmm.
Again, in heels.
And up steps.
And up steps, and she sang that song.
I saw her at the UC a year and a half ago, and what was so great about her is that she doesn't need, you know, she has great background music. She's a great pop star, but she doesn't need it. Just give her the piano.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. She could tear it up, be a rock star, or she could sit down and play ballads for 2 hours.
Right.
I guarantee you she gained a lot of fans last night that probably didn't even know who Gaga was. And, you know, the other thing that I think is worthy of note, she did it all without a meat suit. There is news from the White House over the weekend. Sorry, but there is. The President of the United States over the weekend got some bad immigration news because multiple judges ruled against him. But most importantly, in the short term, a federal judge out of Washington ruled that the Trump immigration ban could not go forward and would not go forward. Now, this is a temporary restraining order, if you will, a temporary stay that will last about a week. It could be even less than that, but it is unlikely to be overturned in any way, shape, or form because you would have to show that the judge in Washington ruled with a specific intent of malice that he ruled based on bad law, which he did not. You could disagree with his ruling, but you probably don't want to put out a tweet that says he's a so-called judge.
Mm-hmm.
You probably don't want to question the third co-equal branch of government, as the president did. You may remember when Obama mocked the Supreme Court during his State of the Union, one of the dumbest things a president had ever done. This is right up there. And again, all the damage comes on Saturdays, and it all comes on Twitter. So it really kind of builds that whole narrative that when Jared Kushner is celebrating the Sabbath, and he doesn't work between sundown Friday and sundown Saturday, the wheels come off. Mm-hmm. It's happened for 3 straight weeks.
A judge, by the way, appointed by George W. Bush.
Yeah, this wasn't some, it's one of these liberal, well, you know, honestly, we don't need to talk about parties with Trump because he doesn't know what party he's in. But a mess, a hot mess, made much worse over the weekend because, it's just a testament to the gutlessness of both parties that you don't have members of Congress standing up and shouting about this. When the president sat down with Bill O'Reilly and he said to Bill O'Reilly, yes, I respect Vladimir Putin, but it's bad enough. But secondarily, you think we're so innocent? Got a lot of killers out there, Bill. You think we're so innocent? To equate the United States with what Russia as a nation did, what the USSR did, and what Russia continues to do, and what Vladimir Putin does, is beyond outrageous. He's not a candidate. He's not some businessman from New York. He's the president of the United States. And it's one of the worst things I've ever heard a president say. And Mitch McConnell, that coward, he had nothing to say about it yesterday, but of any consequence. Paul Ryan, talk about gutless. Yep. Paul Ryan, at least McConnell answered a question. Ryan hasn't said anything. He couldn't be a bigger disappointment. And really not even a lot from the Democrat side. Hey, kids, I know it was Sunday and your day off, but are you kidding me? You want to jump on Trump about everything he does? How about this? I mean, just a horrific statement for him to make. The only thing he got right in that interview was he picked the Patriots. So, yeah. Hey, you know, congratulations for that. And maybe the highlight of the weekend, you probably have thought I was going to say the Queen's 65th anniversary on the throne today. No. The highlight of the weekend, Melissa McCarthy playing Sean Spicer.
Oh, my God.
She great.
Hilarious.
When she picked up the podium and charged the reporter that asked the question. Beyond brilliant.
Like, how many in the room don't like him? See, all of you. It's unanimous.
I mean, it was just great. And if you've seen any of these briefings, and I know most of you work for a living and aren't available at noon on weekdays, but if you've seen any of these briefings, she channeled him. She was him.
It was incredible.
And the makeup was unbelievable.
I know.
I mean, she looked like Sean Spicer.
Yeah, we were watching. My wife says, isn't that Melissa McCarthy? Yeah. I said, well, I think it is. They didn't say it was.
No, and that was the brilliance of it. And then it took like 30 seconds before the crowd went, holy cow, that's Melissa
McCarthy. And then they went crazy, yeah.
Yeah, it was great.
She was tremendous.
Yeah, she's awesome.
And it is actually the Queen's 65th anniversary on the throne. So there you go. There's your top six at six. Hey, you know, Jake, I was thinking, play that paper sound effect we use again, will you?
You want to play it right now?
Yeah, play it again.
Why do you want to play it?
Because I want to see if you can find it really quickly.
Found it.
I think we need like you to crumple up a piece of paper on a microphone. I don't think people get that that's a piece of paper. Do you?
I knew because I knew, but
I didn't know.
You didn't know?
Nope.
I think we need a Jake. I think we need a Jake special here. I think we need Mike Jacobson in a room experimenting with different textures, different types of paper, maybe poster paper, different things.
Paper mache.
But to come up with a crumple that sounds more like a crumple. Because the idea is, with each item, I crumple it up and I throw it away.
Oh, yeah. You could do a tear, like you're done. Tear it up.
Yeah, but then, you know, I'm a child. I'd tear it for a half an hour. So, Patriots win the Super Bowl in case you went to bed early. Yep.
Dave, what did you think it was?
Back from
it was someone crunching a potato chip.
Well, it does sound like that.
Why would we be eating chips between each item?
It's your show. I don't know.
I was curious what he thought it was.
It's 6:23. Here's Mary.
Wow. Oh man.
All right, you got to see the video, which I don't like to promote that, but you do. But in the meantime, here's a chunk from the Melissa McCarthy thing, if you haven't seen it, or even if you haven't, you'd like to hear it, where she delivers. She's just fantastic.
Settle down! Now, I'd like to begin today by apologizing on behalf of you to me for how you have treated me these last 2 weeks. And that apology is not accepted. Because I'm not here to be your buddy. We'll do a couple questions. Go. Glenn Thrush, New York Times. Boo. Go ahead.
Yeah, I wanted to ask about the travel ban on Muslims.
Yeah, it's not a ban.
I'm sorry?
It's not a ban. The travel ban is not a ban, which makes it not a ban.
But you just called it a ban.
Because I'm using your words. You said ban. You said ban. Now I'm saying it.
The president tweeted, and I quote, yeah. If the ban were announced with a 1 week notice.
Yeah, exactly. You just said that. He's quoting you. It's your words. He's using your words. When you use the words and he uses them back, it's circular using of the word, and that's from you.
That's just fantastic.
You know what?
I watched it like 9 times.
It's fantastic.
I just kept watching it over and over. Part of the thing that's amazing, too, and this is from a performance standpoint, is, you know, if that thing is written top to bottom, you still got to have the rhythm of all the different things she does in it and to pull it off and supposedly to conceptualize that Friday morning. And the way Saturday Night Live works is they do Tuesday, they come up with the ideas. Wednesday, they start building out sets. Thursday night, Friday, maybe there's a small rehearsal. And then you do the rehearsal and the run-through on Saturday. I mean, the idea that you would come up with a bit on Friday on Saturday Night Live and bring somebody in to do it, that doesn't happen very often.
She absolutely nailed it. As a reporter,
she was tremendous.
As a reporter, I laughed, and then I cried, and then I laughed again. It's so true.
She was tremendous. And when she picks up the podium and charges the reporter, I mean, that's inspiring. If I'm Sean Spicer, though, I think I'm laughing at that.
I don't know.
I'm laughing. I think. I'm not sure. I don't know Sean Spicer.
But doesn't the president do a weekly tweet reviewing Saturday Night Live?
Yeah, and there was nothing.
And nothing yet.
Nothing. Right. Yeah, he was too busy insulting America.
Maybe he confused Melissa McCarthy for Sean Spicer.
You thought it was Spicer?
Why is he on SNL?
GN.
I have edema on my thigh. Pink stuff in my eye, and I need you now.
6:44, Dr. Kevin Most joins us now. Where did you watch the Super Bowl?
I was over at Jim Gannon's house.
Oh, Jim's house. How is Jim?
Jim's doing great, yes. He has a great house, and he probably had 100 people there, and a lot of people came up and said how much they enjoyed your show. So
it was nice. Yeah. Gannon, I thought Gannon liked me. He didn't invite me to that party.
No, he did not. Well, I'll see if I can get you on the list next year because it is it's a fun party.
It's a true story. I'm standing in line at CVS, minding my own business. I'm not hurting anybody. By the way, I met somebody named David. I'm not going to be able to pronounce this last name appropriately. Zajicek. Z-A-J-I-C-E-K. Very nice guy. He runs a panic room in Lyle, one of these places where you can do team building and you go out.
Yeah, we did that for the newsroom.
Yeah, and it's Roe had his people, whatever the one is downtown here.
Yeah.
There's a couple in
Escape
the city.
House, yeah.
But it's called The Room. It's in Lyle, theroomlyle.com. And you guys had a bunch of fun.
I would highly recommend it.
David's a good guy.
Really fun.
So
it's really hard, too.
No,
yeah, because
really
you guys
cool.
never solved it, right?
Well, we were
whatever the challenge was.
Our group was we were literally twisting one of the puzzles to mm-hmm. open the last clue, and mm-hmm. the time ran out. So the time ran out. We opened it, got the last clue. So
you didn't solve it.
Technically, no.
So no, then the room lyle.com. So anyway, Doc, I'm standing in line, and somebody else comes up, and they go and they said hi, and they're very nice about the show and stuff, and they go. They go, hey, what's Steve Cochran doing for the Super Bowl? And I went, you're not going to believe it. Sitting in a chair watching it by myself. Pretty glamorous.
Yeah.
You know, Ross always watched the game with me. And, you know, he's got his own family, right?
And, yeah, of
and
course.
He's doing stuff with them. And they had a party. And Amy Cochran had a party. Maureen was working.
You didn't get invited to any of the parties, though.
Yeah, so you didn't get invited to those?
Nope.
And you want to go to Gannon's?
Your kids were hosting the parties?
No. They went to other people's
houses.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. That would have really been mean, yeah.
So just in case you were wondering, the glamorous life of the number one talk show in Chicago, the host right here.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Sitting in a chair by myself watching the game.
There you go.
Woo!
There you go.
Had you been invited, would you actually have attended?
No, I wouldn't have gone to any of them. No, absolutely not. Kev, what'd you say?
Did you watch the fourth quarter in bed?
No, I stayed up until the game was over.
Dozing in the chair?
No. Yeah. No, I was tweeting my little fingers off the entire game.
Oh, yeah, I was reading those.
Yeah. Dr. Kevin Most, sponsored by Northwestern Medicine, making people better by making medicine better. You can follow me on Twitter, at Cochran Show. All right, so, Doc, let's talk sleep and start with little bitty baby sleep. I'm going to be watching Abigail Grace today.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So we'll be hanging out all afternoon doing stuff one-year-olds do. I'm talking about me. So if you need me, that's where I'll be. Significant upgrade from watching the game by myself. So, Doc, let's talk about baby sleep. SIDS is something we used to hear a lot about. Now, we heard less Correct. About it. But then there was a study, I think, in the last 6 months that said keep the baby in the room with you as new parents for what? Was it the first 6 months?
Yes. Yep. So we talked about that. Yeah, we talked about that a couple months ago when that study came out. And parents really don't think about that. They always want to put their child in their own room. But we know that putting them in and keeping them in the bedroom has shown to have a decrease in the SIDS, as well as making sure the baby sleeps on their back. So, you know, those two things kind of made a big impact here. And then we're finally starting to see some interest on something that came out of Europe decades ago and is kind of making a splash here, especially in the New Jersey area.
The baby box?
The baby box.
Okay. Literally a box.
It's a box. It's a cardboard box with a mattress and a tight-fitted sheet on there, and that's the only thing that goes in the box besides the baby. So no toys, no blankets, nothing else, just that. So what they showed, this came out of Finland. What they showed at Finland in the 30s and 40s is they had a child-infant mortality rate in the first year of life over 10%. They came up with this box, and they saw that it plummeted. And now they have one of the lowest incidents of SIDS. So in New Jersey, what they noticed was they did their look at, boy, all these infants who died of sudden infant death syndrome, 93% of the ones that died, it had to do with the environment in which the child was sleeping.
But couldn't you have, you know, a bassinet, you know, or a small crib that would do the same thing? I mean, is there something special about the box, or is it just the barrenness of it?
Yeah, no, I think it's a little bit of the barrenness of it. It's also the portability of it. So, yeah, and true. it's also the ease of using it and the cost. So if you think about this, you know, in Finland, they provide these to the families, but they also use this to educate the families. So they give them education on it. They give them some clothes. They give them their first hats. You know, they prepare the parents for their child. And in New Jersey, they're going to do the same thing. In order to get this free box of stuff, including the sleeping box in New Jersey, you're going to have to go online and do a test on child safety. So we're educating parents as well as giving them a safe environment for their children.
So what do we know medically? Is it, you know, your people put a blanket on the baby and the baby suffocates with the blanket, or what do you know?
Yep. It's that. It's stuffed toys. And it's stuff that they put in there that the kid is going to block themselves. They're going to roll, and then they can't roll back, and then they're going to block their airway. So, yeah.
Awful.
Those are awful. Those are terrible, terrible cases. And in New Jersey, when they noticed this, a company stepped up and said, you know what? We're going to make an impact here. We're going to give away 100,000 of these to parents.
Well, I mean, it makes total sense, right? And the teaching piece is really important. Now, in this country, of course, we'd have a late-night infomercial, and somebody would be selling the very special baby box, which would be a cardboard box, but you'd pay $39.95 for it.
Exactly.
Plus shipping and handling.
Correct.
Northwestern Medicine, making people better by making medicine better. What about you sleeping? What about you sleeping? What about you? What about you people? What about you people driving down the road drowsy this morning because it's Monday? Dr. Kevin Most will talk about that coming up. And some sleep hygiene tips. Stinky, huh? Stand by. That's coming up as well. Before we do that, we go back to Mary on a busy Monday.
I'm busy looking up a baby box so I can put it on my daughter-in-law's baby registry.
Just go to app, buy a TV, and keep the box.
It's a cardboard box. I'm looking at it. Wow, that's unbelievable.
Dr. Kevin Most. Sponsored by Northwestern Medicine, making people better by making medicine better. So much for the business idea, Doc. If you Google baby box, Finnish baby box, it's got a nice design on it. $449.
I know. That's what I was just looking. But it's got all the products in it that you're supposed to use for the baby. But come on.
But that's all the stuff you're not supposed to put in the box.
It just says to save money on a bassinet. Yeah, exactly. You can't put any of that stuff in the box. Wow.
And there's something called the Moon Mid Edition, which is $649 if you want to kick it up a notch. Let's talk about grown-up sleep issues, sleep aids. There's a million of them out there, a million of them. And there's the creepy guy that sells the Zipa? That if you listen to SiriusXM radio ever, when I'm not on, the Zipa is one of these devices, and there's a million of these, that moves your tongue forward. So when you're sleeping, it doesn't drop in to your breathing passage and cause sleep apnea.
It's like a mouthpiece?
Yeah. Any of this stuff work, Doc?
Well, you know, when you start at that end of it, from the mechanical stuff, absolutely. You know, people that have obstructive sleep apnea and have had sleeping tests, you know, sleeping studies to show that that's exactly what's occurring, you know, this can be life-saving and can make a major change. Now, whether the SiriusXM radio gadget that you're talking about works, we do know that CPAP machines work.
Right.
And this is something that's very serious. So if your loved one's sleeping next to you and you note that he or she stops breathing for an extended period of time while they're sleeping, that's the individual that you want to make sure gets one of these studies. It increases their chance of heart disease. They do not get a restful sleep.
Drowsy drivers, less function during the day.
Yep. So that's the portion of people that have obstructive sleep apnea.
And if somebody's snoring, if you're sleeping with somebody that's snoring or you're snoring,
yep.
It's not just an annoyance. You're literally having trouble breathing. That's what snoring is, right?
Correct.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the collapse of the airway, and then the forcible air moving over is what causes the snoring. So you're absolutely right.
All right. So there's a million of the gadgets out there, the medically recognized stuff, the CPAP machines, and also there's considerable science for dental sleep aids, which are the things, the mouthpiece. Is that what you wear, Dave?
That's what I wear, yeah.
And it works for you?
It does work. I have sleep apnea.
Right. And the dentist fitted this for you?
Dentist fitted it. Doctor prescribed it. And it seems to have worked. I mean, my wife says it doesn't sound like I'm choking in the middle of the night anymore.
Unless she's choking you.
That does happen now and then.
Which is different. Yeah. What do you recommend, Doc, as far as the over-the-counter stuff goes? Because until you get that sleep test that your doctor would order, you don't know how bad your sleep apnea is or isn't.
Yeah, so there we're talking about two different things, right? We're talking about someone who can't fall asleep versus I could fall asleep easily. I just stop breathing when I'm sleeping. So the people that can't fall asleep, you know, I'm not a big fan of a lot of sleep medications, and nor are a lot of others, because some of them are highly addictive. Benzodiazepines are very highly addictive and are used for this. Now, there are some natural things like melatonin you can take. A lot of people take the antihistamines. They take Benadryl, or they take they take Tylenol PM or Advil PM, which have Benadryl in it. They make you drowsy. It's a side effect from the medication and allows you to fall asleep. Using it for short periods of time is okay, but someone that uses it every single night, that's not a good idea.
I took it. You know, some people are more susceptible than others, I suppose. But I took Advil PM once. And I took it at like 6 o'clock. I felt like I was drunk for a day and a half.
Yep.
So, you know, it can just hit you, right?
It can. And that's the problem, is a lot of these medications that they take, this makes me drowsy. Yeah, but you know what? That medication is working for 6 to 8 hours. So you have that hangover effect in the morning. Assuredly, you fell asleep quickly, but you still feel groggy in the morning. So, you know, the perfect medication would be one that works quickly and clears your system quickly. And unfortunately, some of the newer ones that are coming out that we're saying are safer actually have a longer half-life and have a little bit more of the hangover part of it. So we haven't hit it. And to be honest with you, we always run to a medication. We probably need to start thinking about other hygiene stuff that we can do instead of running to a medication all the time.
What are some of the hygiene things we can do?
Well, you know, probably one of the biggest things is when you go to bed, go to bed. You know, pick the same time and go to sleep. We do it for kids all the time, right? 8 o'clock, it's your bedtime, let's go. Adults go to bed at various times. Don't have a TV in your room, or if you do, don't use it if you want to go to sleep. Keep the room dark and quiet. Keep it cool. Stay away from caffeine drinks. Stay away from alcohol right before you go to bed. And then, you know, don't eat a big meal right before you go to bed. People have acid reflux that's going to wake them up. And I say take a good hot shower just before you go to bed. Very relaxing. Get in a cool bed with the lights off, no TV. You'll fall asleep.
Boy, you're a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And you said avoid caffeine for how long before you go to sleep?
3 hours.
Wow, really?
Yep.
You know me.
Some people say 5 hours, but
And avoid wine. I always thought that kind of puts you to sleep, but.
Yeah, people use alcohol to quote unquote fall asleep, but they don't get a restful sleep. As if, you know, their mind is still racing. The alcohol has made a tendency to slow it down, but then they often wake up just a couple hours later, or they just wake up in the morning and they did not get a good restful sleep because they never got into REM sleep.
And of the over the counter sleep meds, is there one that's better than others, or is it just to use them in brief and don't use them more than a few days?
Yeah, you know, it really varies from person to person, but I would say, hey, try the melatonin or try the antihistamines, and, you know, just try to don't use them every day is the big thing.
It's Dr. Kevin Mose putting you to sleep at 7 o'clock in the morning. Well done, you little hypnotist. And thanks for inviting me to your Super Bowl party. I really appreciate it. That was cool of you.
Hey, you know, just the square games alone, because if you don't have a horse in the game, you know, we're watching the squares more than we're watching the game.
Yeah, it's I mentioned, and you know, there's no bigger sports fan than you. I couldn't even enjoy the fact that it's the greatest comeback in Super Bowl history because it was such a terrible game for 45 minutes.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, I don't know. But the way the Falcons choked, didn't that remind you of me on the golf course?
No, but it reminded me of the Kansas basketball team, which I can't believe Dave didn't talk about on Saturday, blowing a 14-point lead against
Iowa
State.
Yeah.
Wow, ugly. Oof, yep. That took a turn.
And one other thing, Steve. If you're ever going to get in a square game, you know, a gambling square game, have Larry Ryan pick your square. $800 last night.
Is that right? Well, that's good because he needs the money.
Yeah, he does.
Thank you, buddy. Northwest Medicine. Tell him I said hi and send some. Northwest Medicine, impacting every day, making medicine better. Making people better, I should say, by making medicine better.
Uh-oh. Sounds like somebody's got a case of the Mondays.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
All right, 715. Bridget Gaynor, certainly a front runner for the Stevie Awards coming later this month for Best Guest. You know, a lot of the odds makers in Vegas are saying it's a lock for her, but there's others in the category. But as Cook County Commissioner in the 10th District, I'm assuming she had a swanky Super Bowl party that she didn't invite me to either. Did you have a Super Bowl party?
We did. We got together with some people, although I don't know. I still remember the whole Tom Brady, Bridget Moynihan scandal, so it's hard to get excited about him, but...
Devlantis loves Tom Brady. She's willing to forget the whole Bridget Moynihan thing because they decided to co-parent. But your point is Bridget Moynihan's pregnant with Tom Brady's first child, and he leaves her for Giselle Trampchen. I mean, Boonchen.
Boonchen. Anna looked past Deflategate. She looked past a lot.
Sure.
Tom Brady.
Right. So you didn't necessarily enjoy it. By the way, that was a great way to skate around the fact you didn't invite me to your Super Bowl party.
I always thought I would distract you with scandal.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it worked.
It always is good.
Congratulations.
Yeah. There we go.
All right. So Cook County news. Anything we need to know about?
You know what? Things are obviously everyone's distracted by what's going on federally. We got a meeting this week, but we're looking good. Things are scaling along pretty well. So we no too big of a news, which is good.
Do you have any faith in the fact that a budget deal could be coming out of Springfield?
You know what? Look, we always have to have faith. I thought it was going the right direction when I saw things happening with John Collison. He's speaking at City Club today, so maybe we'll learn. I don't know. It feels like that there isn't a huge sense of urgency. Now, this thing with Lisa Madigan, I think, could change everything. I mean, if they have to stop paying state employees, that's going to change the deal.
Right, because that'll light a fire under everybody. And your phone got a little funky there. Who's speaking at City Club today?
John Collerton.
Oh,
he's
okay.
Speaking at City Club today, so all maybe right. We'll learn something. But I think that the Lisa Madigan thing is definitely, you know, it's going to force an answer. Whether it's the right answer, we don't know, but it'll certainly make people pay attention.
You know, the easy argument on the other side is that this is some deal she struck with her father. I personally give her more credit than that, and I think she actually is trying to light a fire under people, and I don't believe she has any deals with her father.
Yeah, I don't buy that. I mean, I'm a big believer that, you know, only the paranoid survive, so I definitely appreciate the conspiracy theorists of the world, but I don't think... I don't think so.
Hey, Jake, is Mike Madigan coming on the show today? I'm just curious. You know, we've invited him every show for 834 shows. What do we know? Is he coming on today? Oh, no, apparently not.
I think he's intimidated because he knows I'm so far ahead for best guests that he thinks, why bother? Why even try now?
You know what? That could be the reason. That could be why he's been dodging you for months. Years.
I wonder if if I volunteered to resign, if Madigan would do an interview, you think he'd come on there?
No. I really don't. It's very noble of you, but no.
Yeah. All right, let's move on to Washington. Your thoughts on the Trump tweets of the week? Oh, by the way, let me just tell you a couple of tweets that he's thrown out this morning, President Trump. I don't know if you're following the Trump Twitter feed.
A little bit.
Here's one. I call my own shots largely based on an accumulation of data, and everyone knows it. Some fake news media in order to marginalize lies. So that one. But then there's this. And listen to the, you got to listen to the words here. Any negative poll. This is Donald Trump's tweet. I'm reading it verbatim. Any negative polls are fake news. In other words, if it's not positive about me, someone must be making it up.
Did you ever read George Orwell's 1984, Big Brother? Does it, right, Bridget? Does it just not remind you of that, all the propaganda?
Sales of that book have spiked since he was inaugurated. I am not even kidding. A huge spike, and people are looking back to this book to say, should this be telling us something?
Any negative polls are fake news, just like CNN, ABC, NBC in the election. He is literally saying, if it's negative about me, it's made up. I mean, you can't make that up. That's what Trump just tweeted. They have to take his phone away. The Secret Service has to have someone dedicated to taking his phone away and throwing it in the Potomac. It's the only chance he's got.
Did you see Saturday Night Live this weekend?
Yeah, listen, Melissa McCarthy, beyond brilliant.
Please. It took me a minute to realize even who it was.
Right.
She was so transformed.
Yeah.
But I thought the skit before with Trump, Alec Baldwin, and then Bannon coming on is, okay, so that was funny. But the ending part was the interesting part, because when he says, go sit at your little desk.
Right.
I thought, well, that's the dangerous part for Bannon. It's not being portrayed as the master of death. It's the other stuff. It's the diminishment piece.
Well, and the cover of Time magazine this week is Steve Bannon as the manipulator. And listen, Trump spends all his time accumulating Trump media. So you know this stuff gets to him and gets under his skin.
Mm-hmm.
And the New York Times has a story out this morning about what it's like in the first 2 weeks at the Trump White House. And they all work late. Listen, every administration works 16-hour days. But they all work late, and there's a bunch of different pieces in it. But one of the things that really jumps out, and not much has been made of it, is when Bannon was placed on the National Security Council, it was an executive order that was written by Bannon. Trump never read it. It was the New York Times. Trump never read it or never fully understood it, and gave Bannon a dressing down after it blew up in the media that he shouldn't have done it. Now, again, I will tell you, the president of the United States, it's not just Trump. Presidency of the United States Assembly and Congress with bills, and Bridget, you can back me up on this.
Yep.
You don't read every word. You don't. But when it's a one-page executive order that you're signing in the first 2 weeks and you don't know what it means, you might want to ask the question.
I know. Right, because if it's not happening in the first 2 weeks, and plus that was the type of thing that started to really scare people, because, you know, I remember a bunch of George W. Bush advisors got on and said, you know, once they got in, Karl Rove was never involved in that stuff because that was politics and, you know, and this is national security and they're two totally different things. Yeah, I mean, look, with people like that, with Bannon and company, it's always the overreach that kills them, you know, because they get there and you start to lose sense of, you know, where does my job start and end? But yeah, that one seemed to be, I don't know, a bridge too far, because the national security stuff, you know, all of this politics back and forth with these various executive orders, I get it. But when you get into the core of our national security, that's where, you know, you want to hope that the partisan politics stays outside.
Yeah. Locally, though, Bridget, Cook County Board approved a series of some tax incentive packages. That was some good news last week.
It was. You know, look, our whole focus is how do you get people moving? How do you get people incentivized to make decisions and to get development? You know, so much of the South Suburbs really needs a boost when it comes to investing, especially in the industrial parts. We also released, the land bank put online 4,000 properties last week. I actually should have mentioned that. That we had taken, you know, if you don't pay your taxes, stuff goes into a tax roll, scavenger sale, they call it, and it gets kind of stuck. And there's about 20,000 of these pieces of property in the county that have back taxes on them. They have fines, and they kind of sit there over and over. And if the property's in a place where they, you know, maybe it's got a bad building on it or the land isn't worth as much, people just ignore it because then the property is too expensive, because now I don't just have to buy it. I have to pay all these back taxes. So stuff sits there forever. And so we went about a year and a half ago and started clearing all of those back taxes. And so if you go on the Cook County website, Cook County Board or Land Bank website right now, there's 4,000 pieces of vacant land that you can buy free and clear, and you don't have to go to court, and you don't have to clear the taxes. And our, you know, we worked with all the municipalities in the city, and the idea is, look, if the stuff's sitting there and no one's going to buy it because it's got this back taxes on it, that's a waste. Clear the taxes, get them out there, and get someone developing. So yeah, we're excited about that.
Seems like common sense. Pat Brady says hello, and thanks for being on. And again, the Stevie Awards are coming up later in the month. Are you excited about you excited about your chances?
I'm going to do some extra exercises, workout. You know, I'm gonna get myself ready.
Who do you think you'll bring to the awards?
I don't know. It depends on. I mean, it's definitely not going to be Tom Brady, but you know, I'm thinking about it.
On a Monday morning, who's your favorite kid?
Child in my household.
Yeah.
Well, since none of them are listening to the show, I'm going to say my son, who gets up and ready all by himself.
There you go. Oh, by the way, before I let you go, how great was Gaga? Come on. Lady Gaga? Unbelievable.
She's fab. I thought she was going to make more of a political statement, though. You know, election night, she's on a garbage truck with big signs. I thought we were going to get a little bit more politics, but who knows?
Well, as you said, any of the songs during halftime that weren't her songs were fake songs. She just tweeted that out just a second ago. All right, enjoy the day. Thanks, Bridget Gaynor from the 10th District. She's Cook County Commissioner.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
James White will set behind Brady. We'll move under center, trips to the right, Bennett to tight end left. Second and goal to go from the two. Toss sweep right for James White. Tucks it under the right arm, cuts it upfield. Driving forward, diving to the goal line!
It's still
a touchdown! And a title for the Patriots!
I can't believe it!
They have completed the greatest comeback in Super Bowl history.
I wasn't thinking much, you know. I was thinking, you know, we just got to score, and then we scored the touchdown, and it was 9, and then... Then we got the turnover. There was a lot of that happened tonight, so. And I got hit pretty hard.
Unbelievable. You want to hear some more radio? Why don't we go around the world quickly? This is a Super Bowl event. The Super Bowl is a world event. You think, well, it's just American football. No. How about a little Austria? A little Austria call on the winning touchdown.
Get in motion. White becomes the ball. And White gets it. It's over. Touchdown, Patriots! They win in Super Bowl 51. Unfassbar! Nach einem 28-3 Vorsprung gibt Atlanta dieses Spiel noch aus der Hand.
That's how we all felt. Now, you know, they do the trip to London every year with the NFL. Maybe two trips now. Two games, I guess, right, David?
Actually, next year, I think they're playing more, yeah.
Yeah, BBC.
The three receivers for New England. It's a pitch to White. White's running towards the end zone. Is he in? We wait for the signal, touchdown! The New England Patriots have won Super Bowl 51, and they've come from 28-3 down to win the game in the most remarkable of circumstances. Brady and Belichick do it again. What a Super Bowl! What a performance by the New England Patriots! They've won it by a score of 34 points to 28, having come back from the dead.
And how annoying for the BBC that the New England Patriots won. I mean, come on.
Right.
Shoving it in their face. Hey, you got any Spanish for me? I'd love to hear a little Spanish.
Edelman en movimiento va por tierra. Tiene tremendo hueco. Se cierra. Touchdown! Touchdown, Pedro! Touchdown, Pedro! From Inglaterra gana el Super Bowl 51. Por demás, de manera dramática.
Goal! 7:45, Dan Hampton joins us now. You know, I said this on the air earlier today, and I think I tweeted this out last night. That comeback was so fast, and you could see the choke in the Falcons' defense so hard. I mean, I couldn't even enjoy it.
Well, good morning. I got to tell you, that was a great little potpourri of, the different language broadcast, nation broadcast. I got to tell you, I don't know if I told you last week, I was in Houston, and I left Houston at 6 o'clock last night. But before the game, I was at an event right outside the stadium, and it was for the Hall of Fame, and there was 1,000 people. And there was about 200 people from Australia, 200 people from Brazil, about 100 from Britain, and about 50 from Spain. And you're exactly right. This thing has morphed into a
world game.
Oh, it's incredible. And 80% of all the fans, they were Atlanta Falcon fans. And I kept asking why. And to the human nature, they're all, hey, we're for the underdog. And that's a great thing. But I got to tell you, folks, you know, as you know, on Thursday last week, we had to make our picks. And one of the things that we did right before the game started was we had like a little panel discussion with Emmett Smith and some other guys up on the stage. And they all said, who was the greatest quarterback of all time? You know, Bradshaw's won four, Montana's won four, now Tom. And anyway, they all picked different. And at the very end, I was the last one, and I said, guys, let me ask you a question. How many, you know, when Bradshaw, he's in the Hall of Fame, but there's 11 other Hall of Famers off that team with him. Montana's in the Hall of Fame, but there's about five or six Hall of Fame. I said, who's going in the Hall of Fame with Tom Brady?
Yeah. Nobody. Belichick. Belichick, and he doesn't have a helmet.
Edelman's going in. No. I'm just saying what we saw yesterday, we'll never see again. And I was really, really I don't know. It's a metaphor, and, you know, not to get hokey, but – you know, hey, you never say die. You never quit. You always you stay in there. And you know what? Whether you like or hate him, and I told you last week, Tom Brady's my mother's favorite player of all time, including me.
Hey,
it was. I'm telling you, it was magnificent. And you know, hey, all we can do is hope and pray that someday we get a player like that here in Chicago.
Oh, listen, I'll take half the player because we don't have that. Hamp will break this down in greater detail with Dave Edit here coming up in a couple of seconds. But I wanted to ask you about the Hall of Famers gathering. Because it's got to be fun for you, for when all you guys from the Hall of Fame get together. Who'd you most enjoy seeing?
Well, obviously, over the years, there's a lot of really cool guys. And, you know, this year, for whatever reason, you know, Jim Brown came. Randy White has always been one of my favorite guys that I played in Pro Bowls with him. And you know, of course, being in Texas, he was telling me how crushed, the state of Texas was that the Cowboys got beat, you know, in the playoffs. But despite that, you know, they were able to recover in time to show up to come to the Super Bowl. But the long and short of it is, it's truly a magnificent gathering when you get all those. I mean, you know, oh my God, Charles Haley, Joe DeLamalier, Lim Barney. I mean, legendary names. And you get to, you know, hang out and eat ribs with them. Pretty cool.
I hope they had a lot of ribs because you just said a lot of linemen's names.
Well, yeah, and you know, as we move forward, you know, obviously the NFL has went more offensively, and there's more offensive players coming in, and it's still kind of cool to hang out with a lot of those great defensive players.
No doubt about it, Dave. Randy White or Dan Hampton, who you picking in your draft?
Oh, I would take Dan Hampton hands down.
No question about it.
Because he's on the line right now.
Randy
Steve.
White was unbelievable.
He was.
I'd take Hamp every time.
Yeah, absolutely.
Hamp's not listening right now.
Oh, okay.
More with Dan Hampton in just a second, and he'll try to explain what happened to the Falcons defense as well that owned the Patriots for 45 minutes and then looked like a JV team for the last 15-plus overtime.
It's disappointing. You know, obviously, I thought we did a great job of, you know, getting ourselves prepared and ready to play. We came out firing tonight, but ultimately just couldn't finish the deal. And, you know, from that standpoint, it's disappointing. I mean, close to what we wanted to accomplish, but, you know, ultimately fell short. So we're all disappointed.
You know, nice guy and had a phenomenal game. With the exception when he really needed to close the deal and he couldn't get it done, neither could the defense. But you know what I want to hear? If I'm an Atlanta Falcon fan, this is the worst night of my life. That's what I want to hear. I want to hear Matt Ryan say, it's inexcusable. We let the fans down. We let us down. It sucked. It's disappointing. It's not the second game of the season. Dan Hampton's here. How does a defense like the Falcons literally own the Patriots for 45 minutes and then crater, were they planning the party on the field?
Well, let me go back to, you know, those comments by Matt Ryan, and I didn't know it was Matt Ryan. I thought it may have been the offensive coordinator Kyle Shanahan, who's now going to be the head coach of the 49ers. And I've told you guys for years, everybody's got different objectives. And, you know, it was almost like he was real, almost, you know, happy with the way things went. Oh, well, we didn't win the game, but you know what? We scored, and I did well. Well, like I used to say, you know, an offensive coordinator scores 30 points a game. He don't really care if you win or lose. It's all about, you know, his offense. How many? And so, you know, that's kind of a telling comment that, as you said, Steve, hey, it should be, if I threw for 600 and we got beat, it's still the worst night of my life. So, you know, I don't know. I'll be honest with you. The early returns on the Patriots defense, and we knew this going in. I think they were 9th or 10th in the league, but number one, and, you know, scoring defense. So they give up a lot of yards. Well, guess what? Atlanta's, you know, pretty good and number one scoring offense in football, and they exploited the Patriot defense. And they were, you know, and hey, Sherry McClellan, he started the game, first play, he was hooked and spun around as, you know, the running back runs for 37 yards. So despite, you know, some of the limitations, the Patriots were able to go ahead and buckle down. And I got to tell you, their pass rush was the difference. In the third and fourth quarter, it really started to pay off. And you know and I know, hey, you know, if Atlanta would have just run the ball a couple of times and then kicked a field goal there with 5 or 6 minutes left in the game, it would have been over. But again, everybody, you know, wants to be the hero. Everybody wants to be, you know, Ric Flair. And they're throwing the ball. They get a sack. Then they get a holding call. And then they're out of field goal, and which gave the Patriots a chance to get back in it. But all I can tell you was, from what I saw, you know, it wasn't a tell of two halves. It was a tell of three quarters and one quarter. And you got, again, you got to go back and just – you know, the old mantra of it's never over. And even though you think the fat lady's at home with the pizza, yeah, well, guess what? It ain't over with Tom Brady, and he's got the football.
Ross Cochran texted me last night. He goes, Pete Carroll calling the players? You know, why aren't the Falcons running the ball? You know, because it stood out hugely. Bigly, really, Dave.
Yes, it did. And you know what? Another number that stands out. I mean, this is unbelievable. I did the math on this. From the end of the third quarter on, time of possession, which I know can be sort of a misleading number sometimes, the New England Patriots had the ball for 14 minutes and 9 seconds. Atlanta had it for 4 minutes and 49 seconds.
No kidding.
They couldn't make a first down. They turned it over on the strip sack by Hightower. And, I mean, it was just like watching a different team out there in the fourth quarter. That was unbelievable.
It truly was. And, you know, I got to tell you, the folks of Houston, they really did a great job putting on, you know, their best face, and the city was delightful and all things considered. But, you know, even though, you know, the one I played in long ago, it was kind of decided by the end of the first quarter. I don't know how you can top what we saw last night. And you know what? Hey, hooray for the Falcons! And you know they showed they deserved to be there. They were, you know, they were a very good football team. All things, but I'm still blown away with and you know it. You go back and you hear all this stuff. You know, and all football coaches across the land, across the world, they'll never, ever let this one go. Because being down 25 points going into the fourth quarter, essentially, it's one for the record books. It's just truly you know, I got to tell you, you know, obviously there was, like I said, 80% of, I think, America was pulling for the Falcons.
Right.
Yeah, the Falcons were seeking, you know, a certain respect. They were seeking, you know, a confirmation. But, boy, the New England Patriots, they were seeking history, and they found it.
And they got it done.
You know, I have to say, I was really impressed, Hamp, by what Dan Quinn has done as the coach of the Falcons. And you know, I think they're going to be good.
Oh, yeah.
They may not. But this guy now, 2 years ago, he's coaching with the Seahawks. He's their defensive coordinator. when Malcolm Butler makes the play at the goal line, yep, where the Seahawks are about to win the game.
Right.
And then he's part of this last night.
Yeah, Dan Quinn may have a twitch for some time to come.
I was going
to
say, what, how do you get over that? Oh, my gosh.
Unbelievable. Hamp, love you. Great as always, and we will bother you soon.
Hey, one last thing. I just want to tell you, you know, thank you for having me on and our great friends at Chevy. But there, everywhere I went, all the NFL, the Hall of Fame, it was a fleet of Chevy Tahoes and Suburbans all throughout Houston. It was beautiful. It was the best thing I saw all weekend.
You bet, buddy. 6 years running and the streak continues. You guys playing the auto show this year?
Yes, sir. We play Friday night, and I got to tell you, I can't wait to see the guys. Otis and Mongo, they were pulling for the Falcons. Of course, I was on New England, and, you know, I know Otis has got a lot of friends in Atlanta. Mongo, he was pulling for Atlanta because that's where old wrestlers go to die. So,
you go into First Look Friday night, you can see Hamp and the band. All right, buddy, I'll talk to you soon.
Go Bears.
There's no one like your Valentine. Oh, I forgot to ask Hamp if he'd be my Valentine. I can go. This year, treat them to an unforgettable gift that's as unique as they are. It's a gift from Sherry's Berries. Shows her you put thought into finding the perfect gift. Freshly dipped strawberries. These are great strawberries. You know, these are Olympic-level strawberries.
What about your other Valentine?
Dave?
He's right here.
That's fine.
Go Cats.
He understands.
I'm not listening.
Uh-oh. Sounds like somebody's got a case of the Mondays.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Imagine if you didn't see Gaga last night and you know her, you call her this morning. Hey, what'd you do this weekend? I jumped through the hole at the Super Bowl. What hole? The hole in the roof. What roof? The roof of the stadium. Gaga was unbelievable. I love the Prince show. I thought Springsteen was great. You can go back to the Stones back in the day. There's been a lot of really good halftime shows. I don't think you could top Gaga yesterday.
An absolutely stunning performance, and they were all morning long, and even after, people were looking for, you know, if she would have somebody else join her on stage. She didn't need to.
No.
She didn't need
what
to.
What detracted from it?
Tony Bennett did the introduction. She started off at the top.
And she didn't do any politics.
No. Nope.
And she didn't
nope.
need to. Now, question.
Yeah.
Because I know you've done some research on this. The lights in the sky at the beginning, how did they pull that off?
All right, those were 300 drones that were flying above her. They used Intel's Shooting Star drones, which literally weigh about 300 grams, about the weight of a volleyball. So every drone included an LED strip, which produces 4 billion color combinations. How about that? And they were all controlled on the ground by a single operator. One pilot pulled that off. Obviously, the first time that drones were ever used in a halftime show. And afterwards, he said, thankfully, everything went swimmingly. No unit fell out of the sky onto the head of a backup dancer or anything. Everything went off without a hitch.
Okay, she jumps through the roof. They fly her down to that first level.
Right.
She does part of the song there, and then she flies down to the next level. They do the cannon fire, a little bit of distraction to get the ropes off her.
Yes.
And then she goes to town, and she does, I think, was it 12 minutes or 14? I forget.
It was 14 minutes.
Oh, I thought it was 17.
And she did, it wasn't bungee. Initially, when she took the jump, people thought it was bungee jumping. They were suspension cables, is what they were. But
same way, if you fly on the weekend, if you have someone at your house fly you from the roof to the ground, that's what you would use.
Right, and Pink has done some concerts like that, too, where she used this as suspension cables to go from one end of a stadium to the
other. I think Guy Lombardo invented the technology.
She was great, obviously getting rave reviews. She also, right afterwards, announced her Joanne World Tour, which is going to be...
This is the dive bar thing?
This is her World Stadium Tour.
Right, but isn't this off the dive bar album?
Yeah, off the dive bar album. Joanne was her late aunt, and her middle name as well. Her real name is Stephanie Joanne Germanata. And she also this morning announced that she's introducing her own brand of wine. Gringo Girls is what it's going to be called. Hmm. Lady Gaga's wine will include regular wine, Dave, wine coolers, wine cocktails, and wine punch as
well. So we need to get some Gaga wine for Dave to sample.
Yeah, and she's going to be hitting Wrigley Field on August 25th. Tickets will go on sale.
Wrigley or Soldier?
Wrigley.
Oh, Wrigley.
Wrigley
okay.
Field. Yeah, she's the eighth concert that'll play at Wrigley this summer. And
are the Cubs going to be able to use Wrigley Field this summer?
They've held a couple of dates for the Cubs.
Okay.
Oh, because they did win the World Series.
I would think that you Cubs ought to be able to use it, yeah.
We should go to the Gaga. What night is it on, Andrea?
It's a Friday night.
A Friday night.
Yeah, it's on August 25th, and the tickets go on sale February 13th.
February 13th.
Yes.
Okay. Far away. Gaga getting it done.
What did Gaga fall into at the end when she dropped the mic? Do you know what happened there?
I think it was like a little, it was a pit, a fake
it was a ball pit.
Yeah,
it was
like
a ball pit. She fell into a ball pit.
And then, yeah, like a Chobas pizza
the McDonald's
or Chuck E. Cheese.
Yeah. Yeah.
She fell onto a mattress reportedly.
Okay.
I heard Tom Brady caught her.
He may have.
Actually,
Julian Edelman caught
her. He did everything else in the fourth quarter.
They turned it around.
It was mattress
Tom Brady
firm,
catching
yeah.
her.
When she jumps in the beginning, there's that moment where you go, what?
Right.
You know, and obviously she's fine, but it was a really cool moment. And there's some video that supposedly is going to be released later today
mm-hmm.
that shows you the reverse camera angle so you see the jump as it took place from the perspective of where she jumped.
She did the mic drop. And then she did the jump.
How about, and she made a great catch at the end of the game.
She sure did. And by the way, all over the web this morning, people are saying, well, did you see the hidden messages? Gaga said that she didn't want to say anything political at all. She just wanted to rock it.
Hidden messages.
Well, you know, I guess she changed some of the words to Born This Way.
Oh, stop it.
And then she, again.
It's a Super Bowl
show. The trolls
show.
Are saying that she, when she was at the top, she only sang part of God Bless America. It was crazy.
Well, she didn't have time to see the whole thing.
Not true. She says she just wanted to rock it.
Yeah. Unplug the internet. Everyone go outside, get some fresh air.
Right.
Let's take a break, come back, and then you're going to tell us the top five commercials.
Top five best and the top five worst.
All right. Dean, by the way, is off this morning. Scheduled to be back tomorrow. All right. We'll do this. The Steve Cochran Show continues. Andrea is doing the Dean heavy lifting today. We talked about this early. The commercials were a huge disappointment yesterday. They have been trending in that direction. I think we're a little bit spoiled, and it's hard to surprise us anymore. But yesterday, I didn't see anything that stood out as memorable. And there was one commercial that would have had a reference to Trump's wall. I think it was the 84 lumber commercial where you saw these people trying to make their way across the border.
Mm-hmm.
And the NFL made them edit the wall image out of the commercial before it ran. And I go, how much am I paying?
I know.
$5 million? Exactly. All right. So what were the top five best?
All right. You want the best or the worst first?
No, give me the best.
All right. The best. This is from number five was the Bradshaw stain. That's the Tide commercial.
Do we agree? All right. Everybody says all right.
I liked it.
Yeah,
it was good.
Yeah.
I missed it.
Number four, the Budweiser, the immigrant commercial, Born the Hard Way, where Anheuser meets Bush, and then they shake hands.
That was pretty good.
I loved it.
Kind of a documentary thing. That was kind of cool.
Number four. This all according to USA Today's ad tracker.
Yeah.
Number three was Audi's daughter. I don't remember that one. It's just called
Daughter. I remember thinking, what is this for? And it was an Audi thing, and it was a good commercial, but I don't remember why.
I don't either.
There was a lot of Alfa Romeos, so I got confused between all the cars.
You know, it was the girl in the soapbox derby.
Oh, yeah, with a girl. Go-kart is my
race.
Daughter going to have
yeah,
to be
what, told? What will I say to my daughter?
No matter what she does, she'll always be less.
Right.
Maybe it'll be different.
Yep.
I don't know how that all tied into getting into an Audi, but good for them.
Number two, this was kind of a cool one. I forgot about this one. Yearbooks. It was the Honda commercial.
Oh, the talking.
Yeah, where they saw Jimmy Fallon,
Glenn
McClarnet,
cool.
and Tina Fey. That was kind of a cool
I
one.
I thought that was going to be like Apple, you know, or some tech commercial.
Yeah, it was Honda.
Yeah.
And the number one, anybody want to guess what they think number one?
Well,
elephant on the treadmill with the pistachios, because I thought that was really funny.
I thought that was funny, too.
I've seen that one before.
Buds McKenzie.
And the John Lovitz with the avocado was kind of funny, too. Yeah. Subliminal advertising. Yeah. All right, number one was?
Hey, Melissa, the whales need your help.
I love whales! Go, Melissa!
Really, the Melissa McCarthy?
Yeah.
Melissa
McCarthy, number one, Hero's Journey, it was called, from Kia.
See, it was a rough weekend for that to run because there's no way it could compare to the Saturday Night Live shtick where she played Sean Spicer, the press secretary, which is all over the internet.
All over, yeah.
But why Melissa McCarthy, a naturalist and hero? I don't get that.
I don't know. Maybe she does a lot. I'm thinking maybe she does a lot for the environment.
No, we would have heard by now.
And it was pretty violent, too. I mean, the way she died, she hit her head on the glacier. Every single one of them.
Yeah, she got thrown against a boat.
And she got nailed by the rhino. Ouch.
Yeah, it was pretty bad. So those are the top five.
All right, five worst.
All right, five worst. Going in reverse order, obviously. This was weird. The KFC commercial where he was painted gold.
Yeah.
Georgia
yeah.
Gold, it was called, from KFC, where the Colonel was painted
that
gold.
That was because it was honey mustard, wasn't it?
Yeah. The next one then was Teensy House Buyers. This was wargaming. A lot of these...
The video game stuff.
Video game stuff was commercials.
Odd. Right.
That was in the bottom five. The Battle of Ebony? I didn't get this one either, with the Patriots. They were all dressed up.
What was it?
That was a game. I think that was a game, too.
That was a game.
And then Real Awful Moms... Wargaming, and the worst commercial of the Super Bowl, the worst one, according to Ad Tracker USA Today, Arnold Schwarzenegger's Machine Zone, again, another video game from Mobile Strike.
Why was that the worst?
A free game which you could download, a free app.
I mean, it was nothing special about it, but it wasn't the worst.
It had the lowest rating. It had a 4.
What about that Humpty Dumpty creepy thing?
Well, that's been running for a while.
Yeah, it's been around.
Yeah, that's been on.
Yeah.
I thought it was okay.
Strange one. That's okay.
Adrian Weiss is a ad branding expert. She'll join us after 9 o'clock, give us some perspective on this, too, and see how many people are trying to get their money back. Adam Hogue in studio after 9, talking about the Super Bowl. We'll come back with a big story next on 720 WGN.
The Steve Cochran Show.
Do you respect Putin?
I do respect him.
Do you? Why?
Well, I respect a lot of people, but that doesn't mean I'm going to get along with him. He's a leader of his country. I say it's better to get along with Russia than not. And if Russia helps us in the fight against ISIS, which is a major fight, and Islamic terrorism all over the world.
Right.
Major fight. That's a good thing. Will I get along with him? I have no idea.
He's a killer, though. Putin's a killer.
A lot of killers. We got a lot of killers. Why, you think our country's so innocent?
Let that sink in for a second. That's your president of the United States equating the United States of America with Russia. A nation with the USSR that killed its own people by the millions. And a president who has regularly killed journalists and political opponents and is still doing it today. Yeah, I see the resemblance. Ryan Nobles from CNN joins us. I think the only person busier on Twitter this weekend than me was Ryan Nobles. How are you, man?
Yeah, well, when you got the weekend beat like I do for CNN, and that involves the White House, they don't slow down just because it's the weekend. So we're very, very busy this weekend, as we have been for all three weekends of the Trump administration up until this point.
Yeah, I want to get to what Trump said to Bill O'Reilly, but there is a notion that Jared Kushner and Ivanka are the only people that literally keep the president between the white lines. Jared is an Orthodox Jew who doesn't work on the Sabbath, so from sundown Friday to sundown Saturday, he doesn't work. The S has hit the fan for three straight Saturdays, starting with Saturday morning. Is there anything to be made of the fact that Jared's not around to keep an eye on him?
That's certainly a theory that's floating around, but I wonder just how much you can trust that narrative that Kushner and Ivanka are kind of the same people in the White House right now. I mean, I think that right now the president and the administration, and our reporting kind of reflects this, is that he operates in a world of chaos. That's what he appreciates and what he enjoys. Probably Jared and Ivanka contribute to that as much as they pull back from it. So he likes this internal dynamic of Steve Bannon versus Reince Priebus and his people versus the conflicts that he has on Capitol Hill versus the judiciary. Trump likes to be at the center of all of these people kind of fighting back and forth, and then they bring these arguments to him, and then he likes to make the final decision. So, it's interesting. I don't think we fully understand how big of a role Jared Kushner in particular, his son-in-law, has. You know, there's this narrative out there that Trump was ready to roll back the executive order that the Obama administration had put in place protecting LGBT federal workers, and Jared and Ivanka told him that was a bad idea, and so he stopped.
We don't know how true that is, but certainly they have big influence. But I don't know who has the most influence in that White House right now, and certainly the president would like to believe that he is the one running the show.
If we back this up to the Putin comments for a second, there's no greater cowardice than having something so offensive to everybody in the United States of America, because what President Trump said to Bill O'Reilly is not offensive to Democrats, it's not offensive to Republicans, it's offensive to Americans. And to have Mitch McConnell barely comment on it, to have Paul Ryan hide from it, is an abomination. But it's not like the Democrats have been standing up and shouting about this as well. I know we get an S storm of trouble from the president constantly, so you can't focus on anything for more than 10 seconds. But having said that, why is this thing not outrageous to everybody in Washington?
You know, I don't know if it was the timing of it that it got lost in all the Super Bowl coverage. You know, Fox released the excerpt late Saturday night, and it was in the middle of all these, you know, all the firestorm of the executive order being rolled back by that judge in Washington State. And then maybe it got lost in all the Super Bowl noise. I mean, does it become a bigger narrative as the week pushes forward? We'll have to wait and see. But you're right. I think the biggest reason is that there are so many things to have a reaction to in the Trump administration that it's hard to isolate one individual thing. And this kind of falls in line with the things that the president has said in the past about Russia. He's really excused a lot of the past Russian actions. He maybe has never gone as far as to then create some sort of false equivalence with our own government, which is the step he took this time around. But I think there's a sense with you know, and I think this is kind of an interesting thing that is really developing with this president, is that, you know, there's this concern that anything the president says can lead to, you know, global catastrophe. And I think at this point, Donald Trump has said so many controversial things that to a certain extent, his words don't mean as much as prior presidents because he said so much.
Well, that's an interesting theory. And obviously, it's better for us if you're right. And it's Ryan Nobles from CNN with us. But I would also say that there's a lot of people this morning and over the weekend of those who have commented who said, well, no surprise, he said it during the campaign. Look, a lot of things get said during the campaign. When you have the weight of the presidency behind your words and you don't change your words, it's outrageous. It's absolutely ridiculous. He's not campaigning. He has the job. Mm-hmm. And he has to be careful about what he says. But even more frighteningly to me is I think he believes it. I think what he said, I think he truly believes. And that shows such a lack of education and such a thorough incompetence. It ought to scare everybody.
Well, and I wonder, when you say that he believes it, I think you're right. I do think that Trump doesn't say things that he doesn't believe. But to your point, I wonder how much he's really thought about it. I think that he's not somebody that's, you know, necessarily studying all these topics rigorously. He's not a big book reader. You know, he gets a lot of the information that he gleans on these big topics by just watching television. So when he says that, you know, I don't know if he's really looked back at the record and compared Putin's record with the record of past American administrations. But he just kind of throws it out there because that's his style. He shoots from the hip and then he lets the chips fall where they may. And we're only 3 weeks in, so it's hard to kind of ascertain just how big of an impact this is going to be. But as time goes on, I mean, there's got to be consequences for these comments. They can't just be left on the table. And eventually, you know, there's going to be some sort of issue that arises. We're just going to have to see when that happens.
I literally just wrote down, It reminds me of Whack-A-Mole. You know that game where they're all popping up, and I'm getting whiplash from where to go. And Ryan,
Whack-A-Tweet.
I was going to ask you about Russia, and then, you know, what he dictates to the media, the immigration ban. And again, I'm getting whiplash from what story to focus on. But I guess I'll ask you about the immigration ban. Today it goes to the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. Do you think it'll withhold? And do you see this going all the way up to the Supreme Court?
Yeah, first, I'll answer the second question first. It absolutely will end up at the Supreme Court. That's the only place that it's going to end because the Trump administration is not going to just allow it to fall. And the opponents of it, his political opponents, are also going to continue to battle right up until the very end. So it's very likely going to be end up in the Supreme Court. The stage that we're at right now is that we're just battling over these temporary injunctions that have been put in place. So the Ninth Circuit is going to rule on whether or not
I got some heat over the weekend because of a tweet that I put out about, you know, they suspended the revocation of the cancellation of the visas. But we're at this point where we're like, there's like four double negatives that we're working here. But essentially what the Ninth Circuit is going to rule on today is whether or not the temporary restraining order that was put in place by this judge in Washington will stand. The government is asking for an emergency injunction to that revocation, to that restraining order. So essentially what that means is the executive order going to be put back in place, or are we going to be in this holding pattern until the courts can to determine the constitutionality of it? And everything that it seems in the legal, I'm not a lawyer, but Laura Jarrett, who works for us, is a CNN reporter, and she has a Harvard law degree, so I've leaned on her expertise in this area. You know, the way she views it is, you know, every time you get up another level in this appeals court, you know, there's a higher bar that you have to cross. And it's right. Not so much about the substance of the policy, but it's whether or not there was something that was done incorrectly by a lower judge in the process.
Or done with malice, so according to every legal expert we've talked to, and neither could be proved in this case. So
yeah,
at least for the next several days until the next court level is hit, I don't see it changing. Now, if it gets to the Supreme Court, it doesn't mean the Supreme Court will take it, right?
Right. Well, that's another point. You're absolutely right, Steve. Will the Supreme Court actually take it? But I think, you know, usually the Supreme Court, when there is something that is so controversial and so consequential, they don't sit on the sidelines. They usually right. get involved. And this is something that has like an immediate impact. I mean, we're talking about hundreds of thousands of people all around the world that are impacted by this order. And it's something that's a priority to the president. My wonder here, and you've already seen the Democrats start to saber rattle on this a little bit, is does it impact the confirmation of Neil Gorsuch?
Right.
You know, you've already got a 4-4 court right now. The administration would like to have Gorsuch on the bench by April, which theoretically, if this case is moved quickly, you could see it there that quickly. But do the Democrats find a way to hold this up by saying, here's a president that doesn't even respect the judiciary? Why should we confirm his pick for the Supreme Court when he doesn't seem to have an understanding of how this works? I think this is just going to be another complicating factor to all these other things that the Trump administration is working on right now. So, you know, all these things are intertwined in Washington, and there's, you know, they could have impacts that go beyond just the, you know, these court decisions that are made along the way.
Now, the thing, Ryan Nobles, is not like Ryan. You like Ryan. We're fans. But yep. I just saw Trump's Twitter feed from this morning. It turns out this is all fake news. Everything Ryan said, I'm reading from the president's Twitter feed. Any negative polls are fake news, just like CNN, ABC, NBC, and the election. In other words, the president of the United States has tweeted, if it's about me and it's negative, it's made up.
It's fake, right.
You can't make it up.
True, yep. Yeah, I mean, and the people that support him, and, you know, they feed that narrative. You know, I had somebody, I was talking with a colleague about this during the week, and we, you know, we live in this world, and we're all guilty of this. There's not an individual group of people that are guilty of this, but we all, you know, in the on-demand culture that we live in, you tend to seek out news outlets that are kind of reaffirm the position that you already have. But, you know, theoretically, you know, all these protests that happened over the weekend because of the executive order, the controversies over how the White House is, you know, the power struggle within the White House. Theoretically, if you're a Trump supporter, you know, you could be reading news outlets that don't inform you of this at all. You
might
not even be aware of the fact that there are these huge protests. So I can understand that if you're a Trump supporter and you're not learning about any of these things, why you might just continue to believe that he's doing a good job. And he might be. You know, that's not for me to say if he's doing a good or bad job.
No, that's for me to say.
But I'm not necessarily sure that every American is getting the full story, both people that hate
totally
him
agree.
And both people that love him. And that's, you know, one of the big problems that we have right now.
Andrea's here with breaking news.
Oh, you want me to tell you the Sean Spicer reaction?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Sean Spicer, guys, has just hit back. He called Melissa McCarthy's performance, the imitation of him, mean. He said it crossed over to the mean side and it could have been dialed back. He said he got so many messages that he thought there was a national emergency.
See, that's the absolute wrong way to take that.
Yeah.
He should come out this morning and go, I love Melissa McCarthy. It was very funny, and end it.
Nope.
Now it's a story.
There you go.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
Ryan, I need you to fix all this by noon.
You want me to fix it?
Yeah, just fix the whole thing by noon and then call us.
All right, I'll let you know how it turns out.
Ryan Nobles, CNN, and follow you on social media where?
Ryan Nobles with one N, RYANOBLES. And I just want to say one thing quickly as a long-suffering Buffalo Bills fan. What happened last night happens to us twice a year. So, you know, if you're a Patriots detractor, you shouldn't feel that bad. We know exactly how this goes. When they picked up that fumble and then immediately went down the field and scored, I looked over at my wife and I said, I've seen this movie many, many, many times.
Oh, it was painful. Just painful. Thanks, buddy.
This is the Steve Cochran Show.
What about Area 51? Do they know about that?
No.
How about Area 52 to 54?
No, stop saying areas. No areas plus a number.
Literally hundreds of photos of Bigfoot.
Okay.
Yeah, I saw him once. Wait, Bigfoot? I'm getting it wrong. Paul Bunyan?
The point is, someone is leaking this stuff. What they do know is that avocados from Mexico have good fats.
So they know they're healthy.
They know everything. Kyle, are you streaming this?
Is that not cool?
No, it's not cool. That's what secret means. It's a secret society.
Oh, wow. Secret, yep. Hey, I got a like.
You got a like?
That was me.
I like you too.
At least they don't know about subliminal advertising.
That's not even a thing, right?
Eat them!
What the?
Avocados from Mexico.
A little wacky, but the early highlight, the early leader in the clubhouse, the avocados commercial, because, you know, there was some content there. And it was actually funny. I don't know if the message there, though, is that avocados make you crazy or paranoid, or avocados make you want to have John Lovitz come over to the house. I don't know what that is. And, you know, I've known John for forever, and he's been on his show recently in the last couple of years. He's nuts. And I mean that with love. John Lovitz is the only guy who, at the end of an interview, stands up and runs out.
He got kicked off Celebrity Apprentice last week.
How'd that go?
It was bizarre.
Did he not take it well when he went to the choppa?
I couldn't tell, because when he's being serious and funny and sad, he kind of has the same look on his face. Yeah.
Totally bizarre. 913, Adrian Weiss is here, founder of the Adrian Weiss Corporation, and a specialist in stuff like branding and brands, and because of that, advertising and promotion. How are you?
Excellent.
I have a feeling that we're not going to agree on the commercials. You thought there were some good ones.
I did. Although I thought the game was a big distraction from the commercials.
Took away from the commercials, especially when it got good, yes, at the end.
Yeah, exactly.
Before we get to that, though, tell me about your company. What do you guys do every day?
We're in the branding business, helping, you know, we did Build-A-Bear Workshop to create it, and Baskin-Robbins, and Dasani. And
let me ask you a question. When somebody comes to you with a concept like Build-A-Bear, that to me seems like it could be a hit or miss. How do you get it? I mean, other than believing in the people that bring it in the room, or is that the secret? You believe in the people that bring it in the room?
No, the idea with Build-A-Bear is to have it be about something more than teddy bears, and to hook it to a, you know, bigger idea, which is, you know, what all these ads were trying to do as well.
So Build-A-Bear would be the creative activity side and something you could
friendship.
Do with kids. And
making
friendship.
A best friend. All right. So, you know, that allowed us to talk about friendship.
All right, so let's talk about some of these commercials. Which ones did you like?
Did I love?
Love, like.
Yeah. Well, I was thinking about what was the first and the best, you know, right, of this type of storytelling ad.
Yeah.
And I was thinking about the 1984 Macintosh Big Brother ad. And thought, oh, that set the bar. And actually,
and still holds up.
Exactly. And I thought, you know, I'm not sure any of these we're going to remember in a few years, but, you know, wonder why that is. But, having said that, I thought there were some really, really good ones. For me, they fell into buckets of, like, human experience. You know, there was comedy, there was adventure, there was intrigue. And so there's a lot of diversity. You know, I thought Google and Coke and Airbnb, you know, really doubling down on that whole diversity message was interesting. Anheuser-Busch deciding to be about immigrants. And,
well, that was the artistic side, the filmmaker side of those, where they really were mini movies.
Yes.
And I thought those were interesting and memorable to some extent. I was surprised there were more than one or two in that category.
Yeah, it did seem sort of heavy on that category.
What about funny? Give me some comedy. Which one made you laugh?
You know, Melissa McCarthy was pretty hilarious.
But let me ask you a question about that from branding. Because when I think Melissa McCarthy, I don't think saving the world. I mean, she's done some movies where she plays the hero. But there's a comedic leap there that I didn't quite grasp onto. What did I miss?
Well, she's just hilarious showing up. I would also say that about Christopher Walken. You know, enough said. You know, yeah. His face shows up. And
so stop overthinking it, Steve. Just sit back and enjoy it, for crying out loud.
She was just hilarious.
Which ones did you feel missed the mark? You know, all these people. By the way, we should say, and I don't know that we ever see this, including the knuckleheads that do the GoDaddy stuff. These are all well-intended people. Nobody goes, okay, we got $5 million to spend on this. Just see what you come up with. Good luck. Everybody storyboards this, goes to town, has meeting after meeting, goes crazy, and sometimes it just misses. Which ones did you feel really missed the mark? Because I got one for you.
Well, tell me yours first.
the sprint guy. The sprint guy on the side of the cliff, and the father fakes his own death in front of his children to get out of his phone contract. Didn't make me laugh. Thought it was creepy.
Yeah. No, that was a strange one. There were some that were just, you know, humorous, pistachios, you know, the elephant on...
Elephant on the treadmill. Yeah, sure.
The Humpty Dumpty was, you know, humorous. But I was kind of looking for more depth in things. And so that's why the more complicated, more storytelling ones.
That's kind of why I thought the Christopher Walken one missed. Because when I initially saw him, I feel the same way, Adrian. I thought, oh, he's funny, he's great, just looking at him. Then you have Timberlake in there, who doesn't say a word, I don't think, during the whole spot.
Yeah, just an expression.
And then it was the end. To me, I think that fell really kind of flat.
Yeah, although we're talking about it. You know, it's sort
well, there is that.
Well, that's true, yeah. It,
right?
There is that. There okay, but when it comes to branding, specifically, I mean, you look at a halftime show. Who helped their brand better than Lady Gaga? No. Lady Gaga blew her brand up in bigger ways than she ever could have in that 12 minutes, because the entire world's are, including a whole group of people who thought, oh, that's the weird chick in the meat dress. I'm not a fan. And now they see that she's got this phenomenal voice and she did an amazing performance. Who in those commercials really helped their brand?
I think the NFL did, to tell you the truth. I was crying at the beginning with that whole patriotic Johnny Cash thing, and I was crying at the end with Inside the Lines. And
the babies.
And the babies were hilarious. It might have been the best one of the night. And so I think, you know, ironically, you know, of all the
brands. And football is family, you know, because what are you doing? You're sitting around, you're probably watching the game with your family. It's America's great family day, right, outside of Thanksgiving and Christmas. So you're right. I hadn't thought about that. But the NFL probably reinforced their brand better than anybody in a year where their ratings have been off.
Right. And they did it so much better than they ever did it before, too. And so,
yeah,
really brilliantly, I thought.
And I think it was smart, too, for Gaga to roll out her Tiffany line right before the performance and after. Because literally, as soon as they aired that again, I went, oh, I really do like that bracelet. Love those earrings.
She's the ultimate brander. Yeah. I mean, she is really. And when you think about it, she flew, she dove, she jumped, you know. She owned, you know, it's hard to own that, that Super Bowl stadium, but she was... all over it. It was quite brilliant, I thought.
We haven't seen ratings yet this morning specifically, Dave, but what do you figure, 120, 30 million watched it?
Wouldn't you think? I mean, it's probably pretty much in line with what they've had in the past.
So if it's, let's say it's 125 million, out of those 125 million, 124,950,000 are on the couch. Well, Lady Gaga is flying around.
Uh-huh.
Right. So she couldn't have been more impressive. The car stuff, there was a great commercial. I felt like it was a great commercial. And I believe it was for Honda. And it was a dad talking about his daughter. And his daughter was an overachiever. And he said, what am I going to say to her? Is she going to work twice as hard and still not be thought of as much as the boy? And then they get in a Honda. Oh, it was Audi. I'm sorry. I'm giving Honda credit. Yeah. It was Audi. So I thought it was a really cool message and a great message. But then I go, well, why are they getting into an Audi? What's the brand tie?
Yeah, well, the brand tie is just that. Now you're thinking that emotional, sort of inspirational ideas tied to that company. It's just a, you know, now it's a visceral, emotional connection you have. It has nothing to do with the product.
Does that work?
It does work sometimes, you know, to a certain extent. You have to deliver with the product, of course. But, you know, there's a halo effect, you know, on no matter how good or bad these commercials are, just being on the Super Bowl, you know, put them in another category.
Right.
So that.
And how big is star power? Has having major stars in the ads helped, or over time, do people really look at the everyman? The non-Christopher Walkens and just the regular people.
I think the celebrity
helps.
Not
the sprint guy, Steve.
I think the celebrity helps a lot. You know, I mean, it's...
Well, it's instant eyeballs, right? Because you're going to pay attention if it's somebody you look at and somebody you like. What was the Turkish Air one?
Oh, that Morgan Freeman.
Morgan Freeman.
That was really so strange and wonderful, I thought.
Right. Well, you know, Morgan Freeman, you could listen to him read the phone book, right? So Morgan Freeman talking about you deserve to take a vacation and, you know, go off and get real trippy.
It was
trippy.
So odd, Turkish Airlines.
That was weird.
Right. Yeah.
Although he does that Nat Geo special about God and, you know, who is God, and he travels all over. So maybe that was the tie-in.
Yeah, I'm not sure. Yeah, I'm not sure what the tie-in was. Yeah. Interestingly enough, Pepsi used to spend $1 billion, and they weren't in at all, right?
No. No.
I mean, Coke had a less... And you know the interesting thing they did in the beginning, too? Did you notice this? And Dave, normally, I think you back me up on this, normally you've got the spot right after the anthem, but before kickoff.
Yes.
And then they come back, they do kickoff, they automatically take a break. And that is usually the most expensive spot in the Super Bowl, the spot right after kickoff as the game has started, because invariably that's when everybody's paying attention. The last night in the game, they did the kickoff, they kept it at the game, and they started playing.
Yeah, I don't think they normally take that break. That's they only break after kickoffs when they're behind in their number of breaks. I think
I
at the beginning
it was
of
every
a game,
game.
No, I think. Well, I mean, you might be right, but I don't remember that happening.
Well, it doesn't in the regular season, but I remember the Super Bowl always having a break there. I mean, $5 million, man.
No kidding. Yeah.
And does anybody know, Adrian, do you know? I don't know. Do you pay $5 million in the fourth quarter of a blowout? Is there any sort of step down in rate, or it's $5 million?
A discount? Or
yeah, I think it's $5 million wherever you go. Probably,
yeah,
right?
I think you pay ahead.
Do you get to pick, too? I mean, do you get to say, you know, I want to be in the second quarter, the second spot, or the third quarter? I mean, you don't get to pick, do you, as an advertiser?
I don't think so. I don't think so. I mean, I think you probably pay a bonus, right, if you're going to. If you're going to buy fixed positions, I mean, we do that. If you buy fixed position spots, it costs you a little more.
Right.
Like spots on this show are $10 million over 30 seconds.
Right.
Yeah, as they should
Which
be.
Is a bargain.
Yeah, it's cheap. Yeah, two for one. Advice off these commercials that you would give?
I would just say go smarter. You know, I think the ones that just aimed higher and made you think more, you know, I think...
And smart funny, too, right?
Yeah, I think that plays better than slapstick, or, you know, I think the bar is just raised and keeps getting higher. And as you said, the production quality is getting better and better.
The
and
talking yearbook one
like
that we all like. The talking yearbook one was funny and smart.
It was creative. Yeah, I mean, it's something you normally wouldn't see. And then that draws it back to the star power. I mean, you had Viola Davis, you had Jimmy Fallon, you had Tina Fey. You know, you had someone who everybody would like.
Right, right. I thought so, too.
Yeah. I love the Walking Dead commercial.
The Walking Dead with a bat on the football?
Yeah. I mean, only a Walking Dead fan would get it, but it was so powerful and short and just said it in such a minimal way.
Right, right. Really, yeah. A lot of Fox promos during the game.
Yeah.
Anybody watch the new 24 afterwards?
No, did you?
No.
I felt for you because I know that's your show.
Used to be.
And I know.
Yeah, it looked like it? Give you a heart attack again, just like the first one.
The first scene was so brutally violent that it was tough. But no, are you kidding? I was asleep 10 minutes after
that. I know.
It's that overtime thing, right?
Exactly. Adrian Weiss Corporation, visionary behind brands like Dunkin' Donuts and Baskin Robbins and Life Kitchen. What is Life Kitchen?
There's a few of them in Chicago. It's a better for you food.
Oh, okay. Well, that's why I don't know it.
Love your food every day.
Adrian, I see you got a website for the company or anything you want to mention?
Oh, yeah, we have a book.
What's the book?
Brand Buzz.
Brand Buzz.
Yeah, the 3 secrets of building a better brand.
Nice. Out and available everywhere?
On Amazon.
All right, get 2 copies. You're careless, you'll lose one.
Okay.
So nice to meet you, Adrian. Thanks for coming in.
The Steve Cochran Show.
We wait for the signal touchdown. The New England Patriots have won Super Bowl 51, and they've come from 28-3 down to win the game in the most remarkable of circumstances.
It's on there. Touchdown, Patriots.
Vorsprung gibt Atlanta dieses Spiel noch aus der Hand.
Edelman in movimiento va por tierra, tiene tremendo hueco, se cierra. Touchdown Pedro! Touchdown Pedro! Robbie
Inglaterra gana el Super Bowl 51 por debajo.
I think I like the Aussie guy. Beats Atlanta dieses Spiel.
He did our bowl game. You know, he did the Pinstripe Bowl. Oh, you know, a lot of people around here didn't hear the broadcast.
No, I did not know that. Did not know that. Northwestern big in Austria?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, good. Good, good, good.
Go Cats.
Our friend Adam Hoge is here. Hi, buddy.
I actually watched the whole game in German.
You did?
Yeah.
So you won SAP?
Yeah, it was fun.
Yeah. Do you know who Thibaut Courtois is? I think that pronunciation is close.
No.
Of course you do. He's the goalie for Chelsea leading the Premier League.
Oh.
Chelsea beat Arsenal Saturday 3-1. He then got on a plane, flew to New York for the Knicks game Saturday night, woke up Sunday morning in New York and said, let's go to the Super Bowl. Went to the Super Bowl. Played for the Premier League leading Chelsea Horned Frogs. And then went to...
They're the Daggers.
The Daggers, yeah. And then went to New York for a Knicks game and a Super Bowl. That's a pretty good weekend.
That is a good weekend. Did he leave early like Mark Wahlberg did?
Yeah, how about that?
That's my
favorite story.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
Mr. Boston, the guy who's so Boston, leaves the Super Bowl early, misses the Patriots back.
Because he thought it was over.
Oh.
Yeah, he gave up on his team.
But when he gave up, it was 28-12. And Tom Brady's your quarterback. Like, when it was 28-3, I was like, okay, it might be over. But as soon as they got the next 9 points, and it should have been 10.
Mark Wahlberg's a big quitter.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, all 5'7" of him. At 947, did we see the greatest comeback or the greatest choke or a little bit of both?
Well, I think any time you see a comeback like this, really in any sports, it takes three things. It takes, one, the team that comes back to play pretty much flawlessly,
right?
Which the Patriots did, other than the missed extra point, which if you actually think about it, had they made that, we might not even had overtime.
Exactly. They win it in regulation.
You also need the other team to kind of start playing back on their heels, start making some mistakes, and we saw that with the fumble. Matt Ryan gives the Patriots the ball, which was exactly what they needed in that moment. You can question the play calling that was made. The Falcons, I really thought that entire fourth quarter were kind of playing not to lose. And it killed him. And then you also need luck. There's no question. When you get a comeback like that, and it was an incredible catch by Julian Edelman, you give him all the credit in the world. But it was also very lucky how that ball bounced around off seven different bodies to be in position for him to scoop it off the ground.
Well, that was the Giants moment, right?
Exactly.
The Giants catch on a head moment and all of those things you just said had to come together. Now, Kyle Shanahan goes from being the rocket scientist, huge star, San Francisco can't wait for him to get to town, to potentially one of the GOATs, because I don't know why you don't keep the ball on the ground, get into field goal position, put up another 3 points. Now you got 31 instead of putting yourself in a position to be sacked, and then you're out of field goal range.
Yeah, and we saw this 2 years ago, right, with Daryl Bevel against the Patriots, yep. The Seahawks-Patriots game where you know, they run the football at the end of the game near the goal line, and the Patriots probably don't have that Super Bowl.
Right.
So sometimes these offensive coordinators...
smart for the room.
A lot of egos in the NFL.
Right.
A lot of guys that want to, you know, create their own way and look maybe smarter than they really are. I'm not... Kyle Shanahan's a great offensive coordinator. I still think it's a good hire for the 49ers. But yeah, the tone of that press conference when they introduce him in San Francisco might change a little bit.
Tom Brady is the best quarterback of all time. Any disputes, Dave?
No. I mean, how can you dispute it? I mean, you can certainly... there are any number of great quarterbacks who we've been fortunate to watch over the last few years.
Sure.
And
yeah,
you can certainly build an argument that they belong on that Mount Rushmore of NFL quarterbacks. But to say that, to take anybody ahead of this guy based on what he's done, I don't see how you can do it. Especially... and I think you have to keep it in context, too. You're not talking about Matt Ryan. He was the number 3 overall pick in the draft. And Tom Brady was basically...
he was an afterthought.
He was an afterthought when it came to the draft.
Yeah.
Middle round guy.
Look, a couple years ago, I would have kind of a discussion between Aaron Rodgers, who I think is the most talented quarterback maybe to ever play the game, just in terms of if you were to build a prototype.
Everything he could do.
Yeah, arm, the ability to throw on the move and all that. And that was when Brady only had 3 Super Bowls, okay? And so 3-1 and then all the things that Aaron Rodgers can do, you could kind of have that discussion, and I did. But when you throw in these other two Super Bowls, the way that Brady kind of put his team on the back on his back in those games, and really just look at this season, I thought it was kind of cool, actually, what Robert Kraft said after the game at the podium when he accepted the trophy. You know, sort of admitting that the last couple years, you know, whether they were guilty of anything or not, it was a witch hunt from the NFL. It wasn't always fair. And the Patriots had a lot that was put on them in the last two seasons, and this was and Tom Brady especially. So for him to have that 4-game suspension at the beginning of the year, and then really they just rolled from that point on. They lost one game. It was against the Seahawks. It was a great football game, and not only did they win every other game, but all but one of those wins, or two, I guess now with last night's Super Bowl, was very convincing.
The conversation that went on between Goodell and Brady. It looked like Tom Brady wouldn't let go of the handshake and said something to Goodell. Is that the way you read it?
I couldn't tell which one of them was holding on.
Right.
One of them was.
Right. But no reporting on what was said?
I didn't see anything.
Yeah, I haven't seen anything.
The way I read it, though, was actually I was surprised at how gracious Tom Brady was in that moment.
Now, Brady is just wrapping up the morning after news conference in Houston. So,
and with a significant hangover.
Yeah. Perhaps.
And Roger had
deservedly
to,
so.
And Roger had to give him the trophy.
Right. The,
at
the
that
MVP,
press
the Tiffany Crystal MVP trophy.
Which Kraft couldn't take fast enough and get rid of Roger.
But it'll be interesting to see if Brady, the morning after, said anything about his conversation with Goodell and what was said.
And the booing of Goodell.
Wow.
You could barely hear what Roger Goodell was saying. The booing was so loud.
Well, because I assume it was all the Patriots fans in the building.
Had to be.
I mean, he always gets booed, just like Gary Bettman always does in the NHL.
Commissioners, it's part of it goes with the gig.
But that was, you're right, Steve. I mean, that was extra loud.
How heartwarming, too, can I just say, when Tom Brady, you know, say what you want, but when, you know, his wife and his daughter and his mom came on the field, and I think I had read that his mom, you know, when he was in high school and college, his mom went to every game, and this was only the second game that she had been to because she's ill. I believe she's battling cancer. So for her to be on the field with him, what a, didn't you think, just a
nice
very
moment.
Touching, wonderful.
And that's
moment.
Actually a storyline we didn't even know about till this week.
Yeah.
Right.
When it kind of came out. So that's something he's been dealing with throughout all this.
All right. We're short on time here, but Jimmy Garoppolo, the adorable backup quarterback out of Eastern, has a year left on his Patriots deal. I don't know if you know, but Adam, the team you cover constantly, the Chicago Bears, has some quarterback questions. Is Garoppolo a chance? Is there a chance Garoppolo will end up playing for the Bears?
Absolutely, there's a chance.
Oh, there is.
Will it happen? We'll see how this all plays out. But there's too much. You don't even need this report that came out this week from Jason Lock and Four that said the Bears are going to go all in on Jimmy G. Okay, now that report says they're going to get him, you know, kind of makes you think they're going to get him no matter what. I don't know about that, but I do know that quarterback is at the top of their list. It's very similar, actually, to 2009 when Jerry Angelo came out and said, look, we're fixing this quarterback problem. And he went out and traded for Jay Cutler.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and he gave up a lot. Jimmy Garoppolo is probably not going to cost what Jay Cutler did, but I think he's the best quarterback prospect, including all the options in the draft.
Listen, we got a long history of overpaying here.
Yeah.
So,
but
I mean, that should be in Garoppolo's favor.
For a quarterback, you're going to have to overpay. I don't necessarily think you have to give up the number 3 overall pick, but the Patriots are probably going to get rid of him because he's only got 1 year left on his deal. He's an Illinois kid. He played, you know, he's from Arlington Heights.
He doesn't want to go to Cleveland.
Right. He don't want to go.
Because Cleveland's a mess. San Francisco's got an ownership problem with Jed York. It was just nuts. So why not come here?
And by the way,
why not come here and ruin your career as opposed to ruining your career in San Francisco or Cleveland?
Exactly. I think he wants to come here, though. I think that matters, too. He openly talked this week at the Super Bowl about how his friends are bothering him and saying, hey, you know, you want to come back and play for the Bears. I talked to him a bunch of times.
You like him, right?
3 years ago when he was coming out, I saw him up close. He's one of the quickest releases I've ever seen. He doesn't have the strongest arm
ever
seen.
Decent guy? Good guy?
Very good guy.
Yeah.
A guy who was already impressive in interviews back then, and now he's played under Tom Brady for 3 years. That counts for something.
Yeah, without a doubt.
By the way, does Adam know that how close you are with Coach Fox?
Coach Fox and I, as you know, are very close.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I guess I didn't know that, but
Come on.
On the organizational chart of people who love me most, I believe it's Trump, Mike Madigan, and then Coach Fox. I believe that's it.
That's a good trio.
Yeah, it is pretty good. Good to see you, buddy.
You too.
All right.